Welcome to Opening Presence, the podcast about creative self-realization. My name is Aaron Robinson. Thank you so much for joining me. In today's episode, I sit down with Bijou, an East Oakland native who also goes by
DJ Cream, coming with all the slaps.
She is a DJ and one of the founding members of Okella, a grassroots organization and music festival whose purpose is to foster creativity and preserve the cultural fabric of Oakland. In this conversation, we discuss Bijou's upbringing, the importance of community, and how the art of DJing is a creative process that never truly ends. If you enjoy this episode, make sure to share it with a friend. Now, without further ado, welcome to Opening Presence. Welcome to Opening Presence. My name is Aaron Robinson. Today, I have a very, very special guest who goes by Bijou, aka DJ Cream. What's up?
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for being on this. I'm so glad that we got to finally link up, because we've been kind of in passing, semi-proximity through friends over like the last like year or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're chilling over at our good friend Anthony Taylor's spot, aka Tips on Failing, beautiful art space, beautiful production facility. Yeah, so now you're up in Portland.
Yes.
So where are you from?
I'm from Oakland, specifically from East Oakland, California. Born and raised. I've traveled a lot around the world, but like Oakland is my home. That's where my roots are. That's where my people are.
Roots are in Oakland. And what brings you up to Portland?
So I came here to get some rest,
allegedly. How's that going?
I mean, I've had a great time, but on the rest, like, meter is kind of low. I haven't gotten a ton of rest. I mean, I saw a lot of people, so that's why I haven't been resting. Maybe I should have just, like, pulled up and not said shit.
But
that doesn't feel right.
It doesn't, and I think it kind of, like, lends itself to show, like, what type of person you are as far as, like, connecting and, like, literally, we met like a couple of days ago. So it's like, typically it's like I have people on who I kind of know here and there. We've literally had like two conversations over the last like 3 days. But then I feel like we've already like kind of crossed that threshold or that barrier to like friendship.
Yeah, definitely.
And do you find like that was like a trait early on with you as far as connecting with people?
Yeah.
And where do you think you got that from?
I think it came naturally as I like talked to my grandmothers about like who my grandfathers were. Apparently, like my grandpa Pee Wee, who's my dad's father, was the kind of person where he would go out and like people would just talk to him, and he would come back to the car after like 30 minutes. And my grandma's like, "So who is that?" And he's like, "I don't know." Like some guy just started talking to me and we just started having a conversation. And so like I think seeing him do that, and my dad also, like, as a kid, just being super open and always talking to folks, always speaking, just being open, I feel like, is something that I picked up on. And it's funny that the reason why, like, I'm literally here is because of that kind of personality, meeting Vincent, a.k.a. Vanport, seeing him at a bar and just being like, "Yo, what's up? You in my DJ bag?" Like, and just talking to him. And then we built this friendship and, like, here we are.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And it's dope that that's like there's a through line to like your family and just seeing like that gift, because not everybody has that gift of being open and being welcoming of everybody. Because I'm sure like it's easy to just kind of label people and they're approaching you just like, "Oh, who's this?" Like and you just judge people off of their appearance instead of just allowing their story to be told. Like this morning I went to the coffee shop out in the corner, and there's this homeless man who's there every single day, just, you know, like like had it, he's had better days in the past, but his energy was like present. Like there was this old El Camino like parked on the curb, and I was taking photos of it, and I was like, "Damn, this thing's so nice." And he's like, "Yeah, it's a 69 da 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 da." And then I was like, he's like, "What kind of car do you drive?" And I was like, "A Hyundai." And then he starts laughing at me because of it. I'm just like, "Yo, that's funny."
It is.
It's about being present, like in those instances, instead of like just judging and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So growing up in Oakland, what were some of the things that like you gravitated to as far as like being an artist or just identity and navigating the landscape? of the Bay?
Yeah. So, that's a good question. I feel like, to be fully transparent, which I feel like is why I'm here, I didn't navigate being an artist or a creative until later in life. So, like, as a kid, I was into, like, sports. I played basketball and stuff, and I was, like, into academics. Like, in my mind, I wanted to be a veterinarian and then a pediatrician, which is, like, it sounded good, and it was like, oh, all the people would, like, respond to this kid who knows what they want to do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then as I got older and, like, in high school, I realized that's not what I wanted to do. I didn't really give a shit about basketball. And my coach actually left to, like, coach for UCLA women's team. So I was kind of like, yeah, my hoop dream of whatever is kind of over. And I remember in 11th grade, I had a teacher named Miss Turner. And I had two classes with her. One was, like, ceramics and one was painting. And they were, like, back to back. And in that class, like, I was just doing all this stuff. And she's like, are you sure you're not an artist? Like, are you sure you want to be a doctor? Like, this teacher literally asked me that. Like, are you really sure? And no one had actually questioned if that's what I wanted up until that point. I didn't know I had a knack for creating things or making things with my hand or any of that. So that was really when it started for me. And then from there, I was like, oh, I want to be a fashion designer. Like, that seems cool, a stylist. And so I attended a school in San Francisco. It's called the Academy of Art, to study fashion design. And from there, yeah, just was doing styling and visual merchandising, and then eventually got into DJing and event production and the stuff that I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like the artist journey is never linear. It's always just like every single quadrant that piques our interest, we see a shiny thing over in the corner and we have to go get close to it and observe it and try it out. But I think that, like, the freedom to do that and not limit ourselves to just like that one like way of being, and, and the freedom to, like, try new things. Do you feel like your, like, journey was, like, supported at home?
I was just about to say that. Shout out to my family, because no one in my family has ever told me, like, that's a stupid idea. You can't do that. Like, literally everyone in my family is like, you a boss. Like, we know whatever you do, you're going to be good. We support it. Like, if you want to DJ tomorrow and be a photographer, like, it doesn't matter. Whatever you do, like, we support it. And I know that's really important. Everyone doesn't have that. So I know I'm super blessed to, like, have a full support system, like, in my family and, like, my chosen tribe, too.
Most definitely. What were some of, like, the early things that you, like, gravitated towards, like, where it's like, I can do this thing?
I feel like it was definitely, in the beginning, it was like sewing and things like that.
Sure.
My great grandmother showed me at a really, really young age how to sew. So I was always, like, into that, and quilting and, like, crochet and stuff like that. And I'd never done it, but when she showed me, it was like, oh, you picked up really quickly on this. Like, you should keep doing it. So that really sparked the, like, return to wanting to do fashion design and, and stuff like that.
Yeah, the handmade, like, crocheting is, like, kind of, like, low-key, like, hype, dope shit. Like, if you can do it, because, like, I feel like people are appreciating more handmade things these days, even though it's, like, oh, we got to get Balenciaga this made from blah, blah, blah. Right. But it's, like, if you can make your own stuff at home, like, that's the coldest flex, to make something that nobody in the world can reproduce, and that it's a one of one. Definitely. So it's good that you can, like, just dust off your and get in your bag real quick. You're like, okay, I need something like an ornament on these pants or something, and be able to go execute that. Okay, so you're a DJ, but but music, that's something that's a lifetime. It's a lifetime journey. When what was, like, the first moment, or, like, where you're like, yo, this is something that is kind of like a passion?
Yeah, again, it was later in life for me. As a kid, like, I feel like most Black children grow up in a household where there's, like, all types of music playing, and I was exposed to, like, you know, not just, like, soul or hip hop and stuff like that. Like, my dad listened to fucking AC/DC and, like, Green Day and all the shit. Like, he's really into music. So from a young age, I was always really interested in, like, different sounds and different genres. And I don't know how old I was, so I have to do math, but, like, 2006, I was working at the Adidas Original store in Berkeley on Telegraph, and we used to have DJs come in and spin on the weekends, like, to bring people in. It was just, like, part of the culture, and I had a few friends who were actually DJs. Some of them I still know to this day, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, I've always wanted to DJ, but I was, like, 21 or 22, and, like, tried to do it one time, literally, like, on Techniques, which is, like, don't throw me into the fire. Like, it seems so hard.
Yeah.
And I like, kind of shied away from it because it was hell hard to like get it. And again, like being part of my personality of like not getting it the first time or being hella tight at it.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, fuck this DJ shit. I don't want to do it. And then like 5 years ago, a friend of mine came back around and he was learning how to DJ. And he showed me like very basic setups of like how to use virtual DJ, actually, not even Serato.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, it was just a spark. Like that weekend, I literally went home and recorded like an 11-minute mix, which is the first mix I ever put out, which is still available because I feel like it's part of the journey. And I just like got obsessed with it and just I would practice and practice and practice like religiously. And yeah, eventually I started DJing out in the world and that was received to my surprise. And I was like, yeah, I should probably keep doing this. And I really do enjoy it, you know. So
that's beautiful. I have so much respect for DJs, and it's very weird that I've like gravitated to so many DJs. Like I have so many friends that are DJs, and it's difficult. Like I've tried like virtual DJ, and I have like my own like little setup and stuff, and I kind of hit that like a crossroad. It was like I think it was like pre-pandemic. I had done like one kind of like pop-up type of thing, and like I spun for like an hour and a half, and it was like, oh cool, like I'm out here, I'm actually doing it, I'm like sent my ins and outs and all that that whole thing. But then it had that like coming to Jesus moment. It was like, am I gonna like sit here and study all these songs and setting all these points and downloading these catalogs and literally have to listen to a lot of music? I gotta fucking like, what do I want to play and that whole thing. And then I had this equipment, the stuff that we are recording on right now, and I was like, yo, I had this podcast equipment just sitting here, and what is going to be the thing that's kind of like my higher calling? And it's speaking my truth and putting words to it. Like, huge respect for DJs, and I would love to do, like, I want to do a set and I want to do that whole thing. Like, what would be better than being in a club like with my dreads out and just being like holding the vibe down? It's like, I want to do that, but I realize it's like respecting the craft and knowing that it takes a lot of energy and it takes a commitment to go through that and to curate a vibe. I was like, you know what, like I'll get around to it and do it, put my set together, but like right now I gotta like dive into this podcast thing.
Definitely.
So explain to me like your first set and what was that experience like being received in public?
So I'm gonna humble brag, I killed my first set because I was super prepared. Like I had a set list and I was so worried about all the things that could happen. Like I printed it out because I'm like, what if something happens to the computer? Like I need this piece of paper. And it was at a party that I was like co-producing, but one of the residents was out of town, and like the squad of folks I was producing this event, it was called That Queer Party, were like, you should do it. Like, we trust you. We know you, like you can do it. And they literally pushed me off the ledge. And one of my biggest fears was like the music stopping, like what happens? And I kid you not, the way this venue was set up, which is crazy, the stage is like by a door, and to go into the backyard, you have to like walk across the stage.
Mm-hmm.
So people walk by and cut the music off like five times.
Yep.
So it was like all of these things in my mind that I was afraid of. I had to face them in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was head down, like I barely looked at the crowd. But like when I was done, like everyone was so impressed and just like, why haven't you been doing this before? So it was a moment of like leaning into the fear and not like quitting. And I mean, I was like, I might fake sick. Like I had, my mind was racing. I was like, I don't know about this shit.
Already planned.
I was really like considering not doing it, but pushing through that fear, I was really rewarded and seeing how folks responded to it. And like, it felt really good.
That gives you the confidence to do it again. Mm-hmm. That's where it's just like, it takes away the fear. And then it's like, oh, like something may happen. Like when you think that something may happen, and like your response of just imagining it is like a solid response. Mm-hmm. You're just like, oh yeah, like something may happen, because this is still life. Things happen.
Yeah.
And facing that fear is always like the first like step to like growing, is like where are your edges at, and then like consistently like reevaluating like where's my next edge at.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's like it changes over time. It's like you get used to one thing. Like DJing for you is nothing. Now it's like, what's the next thing? It's like, and that's,
I'm
and
there.
You have to find those things in your exploration of finding that edge. What have you discovered in your own experience?
So there's been a couple iterations of like my idea or perception of myself as a DJ. In the beginning, it was just like, just play the songs, like make sure these blends are on point, like practice, practice, practice. And then about a year and a half, almost 2 years into it, I started to get kind of bored because I felt like I was playing the same songs, and I literally remember having a conversation with like one of my closest friends, Issa, about that, and just being like, I feel stagnant. Like, it's cool to get praise. It's cool to like know I can rock the crowd and play like certain songs and people respond, but like, that's boring. Like, I want to play shit people haven't heard. I want to play shit that people are like maybe looking at me a little crazy. And that started like a journey within the journey of seeking out different types of music and like what people consider like flips and remixes and things like that. I hadn't even used SoundCloud up until that point. So it was like, then I started digging super heavy and trying to like just curate a different sound. And even now, like almost 5 years in, I'm like, that's cool. Like, people make music and it's nice to play other people's music. But as a DJ, I feel like the level up is like making music. And that's where I'm at now, where I'm like learning how to use Ableton. Because I have all these ideas. But again, just like DJing, I just need the technical skill to learn and then to just put my head down and practice.
How long have you been on Ableton?
Literally like 2 weeks. It's not even been that long.
Oh, I'm just like imagining, because I've messed around with like that kind of like Ableton or Reason and all that kind of stuff. And like, just knowing the little that I do about DJing, it's like, would you like try to find like create transitions in between tracks? So it's like you match like a BPM or something to play in between like two like more popular tracks or something like that. Yeah. At least that's what I would imagine like your process would be.
For now, because I don't have a huge catalog.
Yeah, just create a loop and just be like, all right, let me put this transition in there.
Or cute little, like, you know, I've made some like mashups through like using my DJ equipment, but they're not like the best quality because, you know, you can't manipulate the sound as much. Definitely a little here and there, and like, oh, I'll throw in a little song just to see like, oh, do people respond? But the goal is to like, you know, be like a Kay Tronada or someone who like makes so much music that when you come see DJ Cream, you know I'm gonna play my shit. And I might throw some other stuff in there, but like, that's like 80-20 rule, like 80% shit you've never heard, or 80% like my original music, and then like 20% like crowd favorites.
Hell yeah. That's fucking awesome. And you have to like place those goals in front of yourself, especially like the scary ones too. It's like, oh, what are people going to do? It's just like constantly like going towards that edge. For sure.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out like where my next, I know where my next edge is. It's like basically being like a center stage, like not a talking head, but just like a voice and guiding, like opening experiences for other people and not being in the background anymore, because it's so easy just to like sit back and be like, hey, y'all run out there and you be the star of the show and all that kind of stuff.
Definitely. Can I ask you questions?
Yeah, of course. Okay, no, this is okay, before we go any further, this is like a free-flowing conversation. Okay. Like, I'm like running out of questions and shit.
No,
like,
it's all good. I'm like,
oh, there's another one. Yeah, be nosy.
Okay. I was going to ask you, are you more of a behind the scenes or out front person? And if not, like, where, how did that transition happen to being one or the other?
Growing up, I was like, kind of just like, no, not me and somebody else. But I realized that I'm supposed to be in front and I'm supposed to lead. And it's calling me to my highest expression to lead. But then when I am behind the scenes, I can still like infuse a project with my energy from afar.
Okay.
So I enjoy both though. Like, I do enjoy kind of like my friend Ali expressed this concept, like guided by invisible hands and that whole concept of kind of like ushering and guiding people towards their highest interest in a compassionate, loving way, but kind of like not getting the credit for it and kind of just sitting back. But you still want to receive acknowledgement for your contribution. So it's like, as long as like the contributions are like respected and recognized and just be like, oh yeah, like he did that.
Okay.
And that's cool. Like, I'm fine with that. But yeah, more and more often it's like, oh, front and center.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was your come to Jesus moment when you realized, like, I got to step out now?
I think it came in a very, like, organic way with, like, just healing in general. Like, my brother and I lost our mother a few years ago. And it was, like, that moment where it's like, oh, shit, like mom's gone and I'm not happy. How am I going to go get happy? And really taking that genuine like look at my life, instead of just being like, oh, I have mom to basically just like coddle me throughout life. Like, anything I want, I'd be like, hey, mom, like, I need some money. Like, she's like, all right, I got like $400. Here you go. Like, type of thing. Yeah. But now, like, not having like that support and not really trusting that I can get that from anywhere else, I had to realize, like, okay, like, how do I support myself, like, emotionally and spiritually? Because there has to be more than this, than just, like, this life of suffering and just poor relationships and not being, like, cared for by the people around us. Instead of being, like, I saw my mother engage with relationships where it was, like, a one-sided deal. She was giving. And then her coworkers or friends and stuff wouldn't give her shit. Mm. And I'm just like, this woman breaks her back for friends and everybody around her, but doesn't get anything in return. And I noticed those same qualities in me of just like sacrificing my peace of mind and my energy for other people's well-being and not being reciprocated. So my meditation practice kind of allowed me to shine a light on these tendencies and provide an opportunity to choose a different life for myself. And it's like, yo, like, I don't have to do that. I don't have to be friends with those people. Mm-hmm. I don't have to drink alcohol. So I stopped drinking alcohol, tapped into just a consistent meditation practice over a span of a couple of years and underwent a giant transformation, internal, like, revolution. And I started doing like Instagram live, like meditations just by myself in my room. And it's like, hey, how's it going, everybody? Like, welcome to my meditation. Like, if you want to join me, you can do that. And I did that for like a year straight, like very consistently over time, and got used to just talking. And then a little bit later, like, started the podcast. And then it was just like, In granted, in between then, I was like making art and just like networking and just doing the damn thing. And then like there just came this kind of merging point where it was just like, all right, like, I care about health, wellness, spiritual growth and development. There is no true end goal. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to become, there's not a point where you like get somewhere and then you stop. But this is the process that I'm obsessed with. So how do I stay in that place, but also having freedom to create whatever the hell I want to create. And then wherever the chips lie, like, that's where they are. But I definitely want that freedom. Yeah.
That's a great answer.
Did I answer the question?
Yeah. They answer like seven questions.
Yeah. Yeah. You should be an interviewer though. start a podcast.
I mean, I had one actually with my best friend.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because you're talking about like your journey and like the transformation you went through and like giving up drinking and stuff like that. And our podcast was literally called On the Rocks. Mm-hmm. And we would like have a drink that we would drink every time. And it's funny, we did like three episodes and one of them I was doing like a dry spell. So I'm like, can we record the podcast that we're supposed to be drinking, like, while I'm not drinking? And it actually was the best podcast we did. Mm. Cause I'm like, when we're drunk, we're all like yelling and levels are
talking
all fucked
over
up.
Each other,
yeah,
and shit.
I'm like, you can't listen to this.
Yeah. So in this creative journey, you've, I would say, transitioned into an even broader expression of your passion.
Yeah.
Can you describe or tell us about Okella?
Oh, wow. Okay. So I'm like,
you're like, where is he going?
So Okella is my baby. I'll just start there and say that it was really birthed from a space of being from Oakland, being a native, and I feel like a lot of people can relate to seeing their cities being gentrified and literally feeling like an outsider in my own city, like just driving around or going to certain spaces and feeling like literally not welcome. Like, I remember going to a space called The Woods, which is closed now because that's what they get. And I was like, folks are looking at me and my sister like, what? Like, why are you here? And I'm like, why the fuck are you here? Like, it was this weird energetic exchange. And talked to a friend and he had an idea to do a thing, and we just kind of like came together with some other friends, and like the tribe just pulled off this like day party essentially, which is what it was supposed to be, really with the intention of like sharing space, pulling from the energy of this community garden that it was founded in, and this idea of like food justice and sustainability and just community. Like, you can walk up in here, get whatever you need, like the duck eggs, whatever, you know. Like, I'm serious. Yeah. And people who moved into West Oakland who were what you might consider gentrifiers, and the homies from the block, like the niggas down the street that was on the spot, like, would all come together. And we really created this space where, like, regardless of where you come from, what your background was, why you were there, like, for those 4 hours, you could connect, you could talk. Those barriers were kind of like removed. Mm-hmm. And I witnessed like the most amazing conversations I know would have never happened otherwise, like in this space. So it was like this kind of magic of being in the garden and the sunflowers and like the bees pollinating and like being around life and vegetation and with dope music, with DJs, with food, with art, like just kind of creating this utopia. And it started really small and just kind of grew into this thing that we do now. And we've like kind of transitioned into this marketing and production company, just kind of like, you know, selling our talents to other folks, not just hosting this festival for people to come to.
Yeah. How many have you done so far?
We started 5 years ago. The first year we did three, which was insane. Wow. But the reason why was because we were very underground at the time and it was just on the garden property, which was private property. So we could pretty much get away with anything. We had our 1 year anniversary and I remember looking off like from the stage, which like Jason, the garden director, built on top of like this raised bed. And there were just so many people there that you couldn't even get in the garden. So even the sidewalk around the garden was lined. And I'm like, okay, this is crazy. Like, it's kind of not safe. Like, if I wasn't doing this, I wouldn't want to come in here. It's just too much. So then the year two, we expanded out into the street and like had a block party. And then the year after that, we expanded like to two blocks. So we've done at least six or seven now, but we've turned it more like the festival itself into an annual thing where we have like parties and like one-offs and things like that. But the festival, like the flagship event, is just once a year. And then COVID happened. So
yeah, that's wild. Yeah. I love organic, like projects. Cause it's like, it starts in a very like compassionate, like fulfilling like a need. It's like, there's a void within the community and then serving to fill like a void that's been kind of like taken out and gentrification happens and fulfilling that need. What were some of like the struggles as far as like putting this event on? And
I would say we've probably been met with little resistance. I feel like for us, it was more, it's becoming more of a thing of figuring out how to make it sustainable for us, because like I also work a full-time job and I also DJ, and it's like I want Ocala to be the thing that I do full-time. So now we're in a space of like figuring out how to scale, how to grow, but not losing that like intention of making it a space. Also, what I forgot to mention on the front end was like, it was absolutely a space for and by Black people. We never explicitly said like white people don't come over here, but we're like, through the programming, through the things we do, they'll weed themselves out. And they did. Like, the folks who were really with the shit, like, it's funny, I have a friend who, like, I won't say she don't fuck with white people, but she's just like, she has her thoughts and feelings. And she's like, I've literally met the coolest people who are not people of color at Ocala's. So it just speaks to, like, the magic behind why we do what we do and like how folks find out about it. It's a lot of word of mouth, but we're also like, we don't want to be outside lands. Like, we don't want to be Coachella. We do want to be like a sustainable festival where like I can survive and live and like, you know, help my grandma, but like also, how do you do that and not like become this mass marketed thing?
How do you feel like, what do you feel like Ocala needs to feel like it can be sustainable for the future? Because it is providing so much for so many people. So like, if you can just put words to what
we need, money. Like, I'll just be transparent. What I love about what was always baked into our model is that the folks who are involved get paid. We don't get paid. The artists, the performers, the production, everything you see at Ocala, anyone who's giving their time or energy is absolutely getting paid for it. So because of that, we tend to like, you know, not necessarily be able to pay ourselves. But I've always had the belief that like, you know, if you build it, they will come. So I'm not like, oh, I got to make $1 million year two. We're not on that
half
trajectory.
Half a million is fine.
I mean, that'd be nice. So for us, it's just like partnerships and being able to get in rooms and spaces that we don't exist in, to be able to just tell our story and share with folks. Because when they find out about it, they're super like, yeah, I'm down. Like, my company would totally support this, like sponsorship, yada, yada, yada. But I think the real difficulty has been in like knowing where those rooms are and like getting in those rooms.
It's the rooms, but then it's just like the people in the rooms. And there's like within every like organization or company, and I've kind of started this journey as well, as finding like the energy amplifiers within that company. Cause like, there's somebody that understands you completely and they're just being like, they're there for a paycheck, of course, but they see all that's wrong in the blind spots of the company. So it's like, where's this one person or group of people, this small group of people that are close enough to decision makers that can sway it on your behalf and can advocate for dope shit? Like, right. that's the thing. And finding those people, it's like, oh, like, working with you is great. I don't care about anybody mm-hmm. else, but it's like, you're the one that's going to be the person that's going to be the advocate that yeah. that brings this through to the finish line. Because it's like, you can talk to that person or you can talk to this other person in HR that has no idea and doesn't have the, like, the internal technology to understand or comprehend our existence. And right. that's their sickness, that they mm-hmm. can't understand humanity. It's like, all right, well, go back to school and mm-hmm. educate yourself and whatever, but I'm going to deal with this person that sees me for me, because it's like, right. it's not even an option to change who we are for anybody and for any other opportunity either. And that's like that non-compromising nature, which takes a little bit to kind of like step fully into, especially mm-hmm. when you're like out there, like being like a creative entrepreneur, and you're just like, sometimes it's just like, oh, anything will do. And it's just like, nope. Like, you got to hold the line and be like, no, not anything can do. This is what needs to happen for us to feel good about it and for it to be everything that it needs to be.
Yeah. I love what you said about like being, you know, flexible or compromising as an artist, for sure. Cause, you know, like I said, I didn't have a musical background. Like, I didn't play instruments. I wasn't in the limelight at all until I'm like an adult. So it's still very weird for me to be like, I'm a DJ. People consider that like a thing or whatever. They want to, like, I need to be out there. But as an organization, we have very strong like pillars. Mm. And like, we know, like, no check is big enough to work with Walmart. Like, I will yeah. never have Walmart sponsor Ocala. And if you do, like, you get no name recognition. You can give us the money because yeah. you want to and you want to support it. But like, so as an org, we have very clear like boundaries yeah. and ways and things. We've told people no. Like, we just, even though we still don't have money, like, we have to, because we want to make sure we maintain like our authenticity and like, but I do relate as a person
yeah.
navigating as an artist, like, definitely yeah. not asking for what you're worth.
Most definitely. Yeah. Just having like integrity. And it's something mm-hmm. that like I've negotiated my like integrity in the past and it never felt good. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, as soon as you like negotiate like your values and what you stand for, it's like, yo, it, like, whatever you end up doing on the other side of that is never fulfilling, even though it kind of hurts, where like you're like, I'm gonna stand on like my own too, and I'm gonna say no to this thing, and then you see it come and go and you're just like, shit, I could have got that. Mm. But then it's like, I don't know, the shame and the guilt for like succumbing to your desire for, I don't know, a paycheck or an experience or just the clout for working with somebody. Yeah. And it's like, oh, but that person doesn't treat people well. And it's like, oh, so you're going to compromise that like for a little bit of recognition? And like, where does that get you mm-hmm. at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you spoke about the gentrification of Oakland, and I want to talk about that, because like the Bay Area is like, I love going down to the Bay Area, and I have yeah. like a couple of friends that live there and some that are from there that I went to school with. But yeah, what was Oakland like growing up, and how have you kind of like seen this this bacteria of gentrification yeah. kind of sink its teeth into the city and its communities?
So as a child and a young adult growing up in Oakland, it was always super diverse. Like, I think about high school and all of the friends that I had, and it was like my friend group was like crazy diverse, and not just like, oh, like one, you know, Latinx person. And it was like, no, every type of person you can imagine. But that was literally the fabric of Oakland, and not in this kind of segregated way that I feel like I see in other cities, where, you know, everybody has their little borough or like their little area of town. Like, everyone literally coexisted and lived together, and that was really beautiful to witness as a child. So as I start to see that change as an adult, it was really sad. And like, yeah, I'm an entrepreneur, so I understand folks moving to places for opportunities. I understand opening businesses. Like, I'm never gonna hate on that. But I also do believe that you have a moral obligation to be mindful when you do those things, and to think about the communities that you exist in or that you come into, and being a real part of them. And like, again, that's why I think Ocala has been able to survive the way it has, is because we didn't just pull up in West Oakland in the Lower Bottoms, which is like the most violent hood in West Oakland, and just say, oh, we're going to do a party here. Like, nah, niggas will come rob our shit. Like, we had to be there. Seneca was at the Garden every day, like talking to people, walking around, like literally we're in the community. So for me, having Ocala be a space that I brought that intention to, you see that when you're there. Like, we literally have babies and grandmas. Like, it's a little bit of everything, every type of background, every type of person. Like, it's literally a space for everyone. And we I think that intention comes from how I was brought up and what I grew up around. And I always tell people, it's kind of like, this is the Oakland I know. This is the Oakland I grew up in. Like, yeah, there was still white people. Like, it's not like it was always super black, but like, it's changed. And to me, Ocala, I don't say like it's fighting gentrification. Like, we obviously we can't do that, but it kind of helps alleviate some of the issues that come up with gentrification when people move into neighborhoods and don't understand them, don't understand the culture. It's like you get a chance to just see people as who they are and as like your neighbor. And maybe you're, you know, being in at Ocala creates a space where your guard is let down, where you can see the beauty in everyone and see the beauty in like what community looks like and how it can exist in, you know, for those 6 hours or whatever.
That's awesome.
I don't know if that even answered the question.
No, most definitely. No, it's like, I don't know. It's like whenever gentrification does happen, because Portland's experiencing it a lot too.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's I've like, heard. I don't know. It just, it seems like it just robs communities of soul and connection. Mm-hmm. It's like, yo, like if you're not bringing anything to community, it's like people need people. Like you can't just come in and ignore everything around you outside of like your driveway. It's like you don't even talk to your neighbors. I don't know. There's just like a lot of these awkward, like standoffish moments when it's just like, yo, can you just like live and be free and open and
be human?
Yeah, just be human. And it's just like, I like experience a lot of like, I find community in spaces like this. And when I come over to Anthony's and see Jermaine and you and Vince and Bryson and like family. But then it's like, as soon as like we step out, like, anywhere else and it's just me out there, it's basically just me and the rest of white Portland.
Yeah.
And it's just like, fuck, like, yeah, like I feel great when I'm with my friends, but it's just like, yo, y'all don't have any of the same qualities.
Right.
You don't like I know we've done a good job of coming together and you've created community in like in Oakland and stuff, but it's just like, where's the next thing? Because it's just like, there's no reason that we should be like needing anything. Everything should already be there because the talent's there, the will's there, the drive's there. So what do we need to do as creatives, as a community? Like, you come up here and it's just like you're like right in like the sort, like the mecca of creativity of this city, because it is a small city and it's just like, yo, this is where it's at. So
I know.
So it's like, where so what do you feel like is kind of like next, or what do we need to do to kind of break through and create global impact and feel like sustained and healthy and full?
I mean, it sounds kind of cliche, but I feel like we just have to work together. Like the network has to be beyond like Portland and Oakland. Like, yeah, there's a portal because like I know Vincent, but beyond that, it's like, how do even Vincent and I expand what we do to other places? And it requires working with other folks and being in community in other places. So I feel like, I think that's the short and sweet answer to it. And just like continuing to be a resource for each other. Part of why we do what we do at Ocala, especially the first couple, was just like literally putting the homies on. Like, we know so many brilliant, beautiful people, and like they don't usually have outlets to share their art, to share their music, to share whatever it is. So it's like, well, if I have a platform, we feel like it's only right to bring those folks in and to fold our people in as much as possible. And as we expand, as we do whatever it is that we do, like continuing to hold that energy and that intention in the new places that we go to, while also bringing the folks, like just kind of creating this like cylinder of resource.
Yeah, I think it's just like the pace like frustrates me, because it's just like, because it's like, oh yeah, just like this day and just like knock something out. And it's just like, I'm not lost or pessimistic about the value that's created by coming together.
Yeah.
It's like, even like you and I, this is like our third conversation. And I'm of the belief that our relationship will grow into the future.
Definitely.
And it's just like I'm excited for that. Like, that's an amazing thing. And like, I'll always be a resource. But yeah, just like the pace at which like things actually blossom into fully actualize, community like centric, yeah, or like it takes a lot of trial and error. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like even just on like the spiritual journey, it's just like you do all this work just to step out of the door for the first time. It's like you're doing all of this work underground, and then you like peep your head up out and you're like, oh, fresh air. Right. Like we finally made it to the beginning.
Yeah.
After this long hero's journey. And it's just like, all right, I'm starting. And the perseverance and the strength and the courage to like continue this journey all the way to the end. Mm-hmm. It's like it requires like a lot of grit, and it requires like all hands on deck.
Definitely.
Like at all times, because there's no just like coasting through and no. Say, oh yeah, it'll work out on its own. It's like, nah, motherfucker.
No,
like
we shit. Got
yeah, we're fucking out here fucking like making this shit work, and
yeah.
like sending emails and making pitches and mm-hmm. and concepting with one another and not being afraid to like put our ideas out there,
because yeah.
that's something that I feel like a lot of creatives kind of struggle with, is just like just mm-hmm. sharing, like putting the thing
yeah,
out there. And it's like, oh yeah, someone's gonna take my thing. I was like, nah, no one's gonna take your shit, yeah. but maybe they can help you if you decide to share.
Right. And you know, too, I think like artists and creatives have to also be mindful of not having a scarcity mindset. Like, you are an endless abundance of creativity. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I struggle with that too. Like, I'm gonna put something out and some DJ is gonna like take my mix and just play it, and it's like, cool, if they do that, it doesn't matter. Like, mm-hmm. I'm gonna keep making dope shit. So it's like, mm-hmm. I relate, and I also have had that conversation with like, just do it anyway though, just keep going.
Yeah,
because you know, when Pharrell made his first beat, it probably was trash,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't stop, he kept going, and now you know he's like the, well, in my opinion,
no, I'm playing.
I was gonna say, wait a minute, cut the mic off, we done, I'm going
I'm
home.
And I was like, you see what I'm dressed like?
So like, I just think about that, like, what if all of these people who I look up to would have gotten in their own way as far as like letting that mindset mm-hmm. stop them from just producing.
Yeah.
Because it's also about like quantity as well. Like, mm-hmm. to build a skill set, you have to just crank shit out.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I think about that too. As a perfectionist, it's like, no, I don't want to put it out until it's like,
yeah.
it's like you have to just do it.
Yeah, most definitely. But once you get into that flow, it's just like, all right, cool. Mm-hmm. Like,
then everything's popping.
Yeah. I'm just like, okay, cool. Like,
yeah.
Creative process is something that's forever an interest to kind of like dissect over time and how it's changed, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. and whatnot. Where's your creative process now? Like, since it is like multifaceted,
It's all over the place, and I'm trying to learn how to be a little more like centered in that. But I do have a lot of shit going on. So it's like, mm-hmm. I can't just sit at home and DJ and practice all the time.
Well, there's an art to managing it. I feel like that's the part of the creative mm-hmm. process too, is how you compartmentalize and like prioritize time. There's an art to mm-hmm. communicating, sending texts at the time that they need to be sent.
That's
and
true.
It's like, there's an art to all of it.
There's an art to it. And shout out to my therapist, because she told me to buy a planner. Like a physical planner.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have my little calendar. It's like, she's like, no, you need to like literally look at your weeks and your months to see like, ooh, I'm doing too much. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot going on here, or I have all these things. Maybe I should bake in resting for the next 2 days after that, versus like just going. So I guess, yeah, my part of my creative process has included like really looking ahead in a way that I didn't always do.
Mm-hmm.
And just really being mindful of like the feeling and the vibe that I'm in the moment. Sometimes, like, you know, you have deadlines. I have to do shit. I have to like practice for the show. And I'm just like, I'm not feeling it though. Like,
mm-hmm.
so I don't, or I try it and it sucks. And I'm like, I don't want to. And then I stop and I come back to it. And like, that's been probably the biggest breakthrough for me, is like, creativity is not like just this endless thing. Sometimes you have to stop and reset and walk away and go smoke a joint or make some food or whatever, go to sleep. Like,
mm-hmm.
for the process, yeah, it can be different. And yeah, I mean, I guess as a DJ, I'm always digging, i.e. like always looking for new music, always Shazamming, always bookmarking, always adding things to playlists, like to go back and like catalog and save, and like, okay, I might download 20 songs today and I only really need like 5 of them, but those other 15, like, I'm gonna save them somewhere, because when that like funk set comes up,
yeah,
I got my funk crate and I have all these like deep cuts that I've just found over time. So that's part of my process. Like, what else?
Yeah, I like the never end. Like the one thing I appreciate, or one of many things I appreciate about like DJing, is like the never ending nature of it.
Oh my gosh!
Because it's just like, yo, like music is your medium. It's like there's the physical like thing and just like just moving things around and like curating. But it's like when you're just looking at music in general, mm-hmm. like so many genres, like so much stuff that hasn't even been discovered that like somebody like did in their basement, mm-hmm. like in like the mid like 70s. And it's just like, no one's heard it until somebody went to a garage sale and found like their recordings or something. And
or sampled it.
Yeah. Or sampled it. And that, I don't know, that just seems so desirable. 'Cause it's just like similar to like spiritual path and awakening and just meditation and all that kind of stuff. It's like, yo, like you're never going to fully understand mm-hmm. your humanity. Like, you're never going to fully grasp what it means to be human in your connection to a higher power. Like, you'll never completely know.
No.
And that's desirable for me. I'm just like, oh, really? Like, I get to, like, study and be a part of this process of awakening and try every single day just to know God a little bit more than I did the day before. Bet. Sign me up. Because it's just like, I don't want, like, this, like, this calcified version of what people think success is at the end of the day, where it's just like, oh yeah, here's your top of the mountain and then you never come off of the mountain. It's just like, well, like what's on the other side of the mountain,
right?
Like at the base of the mountain. And I want to know the whole entire space. I don't want to know just the top.
Like there's more mountains.
Yeah. And it's like, well, there could be like a tunnel or something. Like,
right.
There,
or like, a waterfall.
Yeah. It's, I want to be able to like explore all of it. And DJing seems like it's like set up to always be in that curious mind state.
Yeah, I feel like it's a continual like exploration of your like how you develop your ear, because I was having this conversation I think with Vincent, and he played a song in his car, and I'm like, man, I used to like play this all the time, like my first year as a baby DJ, because that was like what I listened to, and it was just like, this is the song that I want to play in this moment, whatever. And I think about how that changes constantly, like almost gig to gig, like what am I listening to, what am I playing, what am I curating. And it's different when I'm just like at home working versus when I'm like playing for the world or to record or whatever. Like the vibe that I'm on all the time is not necessarily what I share. But also thinking about like, is that, does that have to be the case? Like, can I also take these bits and pieces of me, of my favorite music that like I wish I would have made, and like share that as well as a DJ? So yeah, it's a constant like exploration of self and how you share and express yourself through music and through sound.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's interesting, like, how much we pick up and throw into our own style passively. It's just, like, you start expressing and doing things a certain way, and you're like, wait, where did I get that? It's just like, wait, I didn't consciously decide to do something, but now it's, like, something's a part of, like, your steez or your mojo. It's, like, you've just adopted this thing by kind of just living, and then it's just, like, it turns into a certain style, and it's just like, wait, I've never express this, you know?
Yeah, I've had those moments. Two things. So I was thinking as you were speaking, but one of them was like, yeah, I've had moments of like not DJing or not practicing or whatever, and then just like getting back on the decks and doing some shit. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I didn't even know I could do that. Like, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
But it's just like this natural, like, you know, when you build a skill, it's there. It's like muscle memory almost. And I've definitely been surprised at like how I would think, you know, it's like, oh, if you don't work out, like, you know, you don't have abs anymore. But then it's like, when you do, though, your body's like, oh, we're doing that again. Okay. And then the other thing I was going to say was one of my favorite things to do, or like my favorite moments as a DJ, is when I'm out in the world and I see another DJ and I see them do some shit. And I'm like, oh, that's how you do that. Like, and it unlocks something in like the leveling of the DJ skill set of like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. For the longest, like, and I'm sure people who spin on vinyl are like, duh, but for the longest, I didn't realize with my controller, like you can literally move the jog wheel to speed up or slow down the record. And that's another form of like blending a song. Like kind of cheat and use the like sync button. But sometimes that throws you off, especially when you start to use or spin with like music that's people playing instruments. The timing is never like perfect. It's not like electronic. It's not a computer. And I was like, I was watching one of my homies DJ, and I saw her like, and I'm like, wait, what the fuck? Oh my God. Like, I can do that too. And it totally unlocked like another way of just identifying with myself and my craft and like how I do my thing in this way. And she didn't even fucking know. It was just like, so that's one of my favorite things too, is just like learn from people who are doing the same thing in the moment, not necessarily in this like classroom setting of like, come through and teach me. It's like, no, you just learn by experiencing sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. I learned so much just by like people's capacities that they've learned through their own experience. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just like holding space for another person, like I feel like not a lot of people like are gifted. I don't want to say gifted. Everyone's gifted, but like not a lot of people like are skillful mm-hmm. at sharing and creating space for one another and being able to kind of like offload, unload, mm-hmm. receive information and energy for friends and stuff. And recently I've like recognized that quality in a lot of my friends where it's just like, yo, like you guys can receive and transmute and hold space for me in ways that I've never really like expected of other people. And now I'm like starting to see like the thing that I do for other people, like other people are capable of doing that same thing. So finding and learning that it's like, no, like other people can do that for you as well. So I can come in and put some things on the table and work things out and not have it completely like overflow or overtake someone else when people say, oh, you're too much or da 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 da. It's like, no, it's like people are skilled and talented and just to see like the brilliance of the people around you is like, I'm like, oh my gosh, just can I just like exist in this utopia of like people's awesomeness at all times.
Definitely.
And just stay in that space forever. And I think it's just finding the communities, finding the people and curating those spaces that nurture our growth and allow us to keep being inspired and continuing to, I don't know, stay on this path, but in a way that feels connected and empowered.
I mean, that's the dream, to just be able to do that like all the time.
Yeah.
With my people, or my people, whoever, like, you know, not necessarily even people I know, like my people aren't always people I know.
Well, yeah, it's like the people that are out there. Mm-hmm. It's like, think of how many, I think I saw today, it was like, there's more people out there that like that love you so much that you've never met before.
Oh my gosh.
It's just like there's literally like hundreds of people that are in love with the person that you are today, but you've never met them. And it's like you can like tomorrow you can meet them or today or like 6 months, mm-hmm. 6 years from now. So like being open to allow that love or to allow those people into your life and just know it, because it's just like similar to like you and Vince, mm-hmm. it was just like,
it just happened.
Click, like it's already locked in, and we don't need to like go through this long vetting process, because
yes.
like energy is energy, and it's just like, cool, you recognize it, and then it's like, all right, cool, let's start building something, and it just goes off into the future and the unknown. It's like, all right, what do we want to do? All right, cool. Let's go this way now.
Yeah. I love that when folks or when two people or whatever can exist in that space of like knowing like this feels familiar, this feels like right, and not questioning it and just mm-hmm. going with it and leaning into it. And, you know, whatever happens is going to happen, but like not thinking about that, just being present in the mm-hmm. moment and like, but no, like we vibe, like this is tight. Like we mm-hmm. should keep doing this, because we had that conversation pretty early on, just with like, it feels like we've been friends forever, but we really haven't, when we were like 6 months in, 1 year in. It was like, but there's no reason to be like, well, I don't really know you, so I'm not gonna like, it was like, nah, like it's cool. This is me. This is mm-hmm. you. Like we in it.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful for that.
And me too.
Yeah.
Me too. Like it's been, an amazing journey. And I've met so many cool people along the way that I know is like literally the result of that one conversation with that mm-hmm. one person. Mm-hmm. Like I'm literally here right now because of that.
Yeah. It's so like wild just to see the magic of openness, mm-hmm. like do its work. 'Cause it's like, it didn't take any actual work. It's just a willingness to show up and to be present and to recognize the gifts in one another and to ask questions and be present. It's like, it just wrapped up into this like beautiful experience.
Yeah.
Dope. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Oh gosh, I'm so bad at this. I don't know. They should. No.
No.
I can't think of anything. Like, I don't know. Follow me on Instagram, which I don't. I'm like, whatever. I don't care about that shit.
So what is your Instagram?
So it's Bijou, BIJOU _ DJ Cream. And that's KREAM.
Dope. Thank you so much for this time. I've enjoyed meeting you, and I know that this friendship's going to go a long way.
Yeah,
awesome.
Likewise.
Well, thank you, Bijou, and thank you all for listening to Opening Presence.